Now let's continue on. Every once in a while, in my almost daily calls to Ron Carey, because he's a webmaster and I answer my emails, and he is very fast typing, and he types them up and sends them on. So every once in a while, I have him in a session of my musings. And here's what I said on October 8th. Musings on Turkey. Now, that has nothing to do with Thanksgiving. Okay. Now, at that particular time, Turkey moved all of, not all, but a number of their tanks and right up on the line of Turkey, and Syria is a little further south, and where the Kurds were. And if we remember the Bible prophecies, and what we're going to understand is, at the end time, the 12 tribes of Israel are involved, Edom is involved, Ishmael is involved. Now, Edom is Esau, the twin brother of Jacob. And Ishmael is the half-brother of Isaac. And that's when Sarah gave him some ill-founded advice on how to get a son. So in the musings, I said this. Now let's see if we can relate what is happening today. Turkey has voted with a large majority to go into Syria and Iraq. However, other than moving troops up into position to move across the border, they have done nothing. Could it be that they are waiting for the right moment? Now, Edom, Oman, Ottoman. Remember the Ottoman Empire? That lasted till 1917. And the Turks were defeated and they had to recede all the way back to the Anatolian Peninsula there, or what is called Turkey today. They lost an empire. They controlled what is now Iraq and Jordan and Lebanon and Syria, and all the way down they also controlled Egypt, okay? And the caliphate was in Egypt. And the Arabs from the south controlled everything down there. So, here we are again. What's in the south below Egypt? Well, they're the United Arab Emirates. What are they doing? They're calling for moderation of Arabs and terrorists, right? They're even having their military aircraft, which they have so much money they bought from America, and they're going in trying to settle things in Libya. They're also participating in the bombings against ISIS. Turkey has moved up to the border. So, these were my musings. Because I'm sure that Turkey would love to resurrect power and authority over the countries that were part of the Ottoman Empire, which then would be Syria, Lebanon, Palestine, Iraq, naming those, mainly those. However, they're not going to take it over as aggressors. And Obama is certainly not going to do anything to send very many American troops in there to do anything. And besides, the lesson that is taught, Arabs will never, 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 never submit to Western imposition of civilization and order. Now, the Turks have assimilated a lot of that in Turkey. But the perfect solution, have the Muslims go in and fight against ISIS. Let all of those from all the other countries that want to come there and be terrorists, let them go. And then have Turkey take care of them. That would bring order to the Middle East Muslim power, not Western power. And Saudi Arabia is all for it. The Arabs down south, they are working with them. Okay? So they went. So I went on and say, now then, they cannot reveal at this time that that is what they intend to do. However, I think they are deliberately waiting for two things. Number one, to let ISIS destroy as many of the Kurds and Armenians as possible before they make their move. So that's already happened. Now they're helping the Kurds and Armenians. They also know that Obama is not going to do anything which plays right into their hands, so therefore they are waiting, though they could go in on a moment's notice. And in order for them to have suzerainty over these countries, they must come in as saviors, not conquerors. And in this case, then there would be Muslims killing Muslims instead of Western countries killing Muslims. Then Saudi Arabia, I mentioned that, all of there, they are all Sunni, and they need to protect themselves against Iran. All right? And this came out Thursday. Iraq and Turkey vow to work together against ISIS. Now, it says here, in spite of the problems they've had in the past, they've decided to come together. The foreign minister, the new foreign minister of Iraq and the foreign minister of Turkey have gotten together. And in the face of the common threat of ISIS, ISIL, and with the relief of recent Arbel-Baghdad agreement over oil deposits, and they agreed that they would have stability, and Iraq's stability and peace is Turkey's stability and peace. So we can look for Turkey to go in at the right moment and do the world a great favor, and Obama will be a big hero. Because he said, the Muslims have to solve their own problems. Well, okay, I can almost hear him standing up and telling us that. Well, that's what I said. And we need to give them congratulations for doing it, okay? Okay. Al-Abadi, meanwhile, announced the neighbors have agreed to share intelligence information against ISIL. Now, Al-Abadi is the foreign minister from Iraq. The Iraqi prime minister added, talks on cooperative opportunities over security and military fields will be continued with joint works of the two countries' delegations. So, Iraq will invite Turkey in, and they will come in and solve the problem with Assad. Then they will go down and take care of the situation with Lebanon. Then they will take care of the situation with the Palestinians. And remember, Luke 24 says, when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, know that its desolation is near. Think about what's going on in Jerusalem. All the killing? Now they're going to allow certain citizens to carry firearms. And I think all of this is going to force the Jews to understand that the temple site is not where the Mosque of Omar is. And that will relieve a lot of tensions. Okay? Now, it's hard to pronounce the Turkey foreign minister's name. It is Davutoglu. Davutoglu said, Al-Abadi also confirmed a visit to Turkey in December on his agenda. Okay? They worked things out to pump oil north and west into a port at Turkey to ship it to the world as well as natural gas. Then here is another article on that. With a new government in Baghdad, Iraq is reaching out to neighboring countries while fighting within an international coalition against ISIS. Turkey is part of the coalition and has allowed Iraqi Kurd forces to cross the border into Syria to help fight against the group. That's going on, okay? Then here's another one. Iraq and Kurdish regional government have come to agreement to resolve conflict on oil exports. So, watch what's going to happen there. Now, how are all of these things going to come about? Well, we're still at Revelation 17, so let's go here, okay? Okay, let's come here to verse 12. Now, this is concerning the coming one world order. And the 10 horns that you saw are 10 kings who have not received a kingdom, but shall receive authority as kings for 1 hour with the beast. These all have one mind and shall give up their power and authority to the beast. Okay? Come down here to verse 17. For God has put it into their hearts to do his will. So how are all these things going to come about? God is going to make it happen. And to act with one accord, to give their kingdom to the beast until the words of God have been fulfilled. And that's what they have been wanting. Now, I've got another book that I just got, written by Kissinger, and he talks about the current world order. Anybody know how the current world order came about? Okay. It was the Accord of 1648 at the end of the 30 Years' War. That's when the Catholics and the Protestants quit fighting and accepted each other and their nations and so forth. And that's what set up the nation state with reciprocal foreign ministers and things like this to tone down all the war that they had been having. But that still never solved all the problems of war in Europe. All right? Now let's look at another one totally different from this, but in the Near East. How many have heard about, well, the Exodus didn't take place where we said it takes place, crossing the Red Sea, but they crossed all the way through the Sinai Peninsula and came to the Gulf of Aqaba, and that's where they crossed the Red Sea. Well, it's totally impossible for them to travel in 7 days to get there. Guess how fast they would have to travel, traveling 18 hours a day. 7¾ miles an hour. Now, are you going to get a bunch of refugees to do that? No way. The Bible is always right. Red Sea discovery, confirmation. Let me read it to you. Scientists led by Professor Abdul Mohammed Gadir and associated with Cairo's University Facility of Archaeology have already recovered a total of more than 400 different skeletons. What were they looking for? Down in the Red Sea, right where it was said that they crossed the Red Sea, they found a huge pile of human bones. And broken chariots stuck in the mud. All right? They have already recovered more than 400 skeletons, as well as hundreds of weapons and pieces of armor, also the remains of 2 war chariots scattered over an area of approximately 200 square meters. They estimate that more than 4,000 other bodies could be dispersed in a wider area, suggesting that an army of large size who perished on that site. Then it talks about the magnificent blade, and it shows the blade that they had there. Okay? Certainly the weapon of important character, it was discovered near the remains of a richly decorated war chariot, suggesting it might have belonged to a prince or a nobleman. Many clues on the site have brought Professor Gadir and his team to conclude that the bodies could be linked to the famous episode of the Exodus. First of all, the ancient scholars seem to have died, seem to have died on dry ground, since no trace of bones and ships have been found in the area. The positions of the body and the fact that they were stuck in a vast quantity of clay and rock implies that they could have died in a mudslide or a tidal wave. Well, let's go back to Exodus 14. Is the Bible true? Yes. What did Paul write? All Scripture is God-breathed. All right? Exodus 14. You know what happened when they came up with their chariots and the army? The children of Israel said, oh, who's going to save us? Okay, so God said he would. Okay, so let's pick it up here. Exodus 14 and verse 14. The Lord shall fight for you, and you shall be still. And the Lord said to Moses, why do you cry to me? Speak to the children of Israel that they go forward. Now, how are they going to go forward? Here they are, right along the Red Sea. And in the column that they were in, it was probably close to 8 to 10 miles long. So crossing the Red Sea was not just a little bit going that you have like in the movie The Ten Commandments. This was a huge thing. Okay? And you lift up your rod and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it. And the children of Israel shall go on dry ground through the midst of the sea. And behold, I'm about to harden the heart of the Egyptians, and they shall follow them, and I will get honor for myself upon Pharaoh and over all of his army and over his chariots and over his horsemen. Just think about those archaeologists there discovering all of this and bringing all of these things up. Look what our ancestors did. Look what God did to them. I wonder if that's going to motivate any of them to repent. I mean, hey, if you're bringing up all these bones in heaps down there at the bottom of the ocean, and it looks like, and we will see, they got stuck in the mud. And that's exactly what the Bible brings out. And then what happened? Tidal wave came from both ends of the sea, took care of them. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I will be glorified through Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen. And the angel of God who went before the camp of Israel moved, and he went to the rear of them, over and back of the children of Israel. And the pillar of the cloud went from in front of them and stood behind them. And it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel. And it was a cloud of darkness to one, but it gave light by night to the other, so that the two did not come near one another all night. And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind all that night, and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. See, when God does something, he's going to do it on a great and a grand scale. I need to give another sermon. How is Christ going to return? He's not going to return like a Twitter invasion. Hello, I'm here. It's time for the rapture. It's going to be a heaven-shaking and an earth-shaking event. Okay? Just like this was. Okay, and the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea on the dry ground, and the waters were a wall to them on the right hand and on the left. And the Egyptians pursued them and went in after them to the middle of the sea. So God let them get right to the middle. Now just think how they must have felt. Boy, look at this. We are going to get them. Look, we're almost there. Right in the middle of the sea. Okay. All of Pharaoh's horses, and I'd like to find out if they find horse skeletons there too. Okay. His chariots and his horsemen. And in the morning watch, it came to pass. Now the morning watch, this is probably like about just right at sunrise at the end of the morning watch. Okay. The Lord looked down upon the army of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and the cloud, and the army of the Egyptians was thrown into confusion. And he loosed their chariot wheels, made them go heavily, that he caused the ground, the dry ground, to become mud. And I imagine they were sinking in it, just like they found. It was dry ground they got stuck in. Okay? And made them go heavily, so that the Egyptians said, "Let's flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fights for them against the Egyptians." No way of escape. And here on the other side, here's Moses and all the children of Israel watching. And God said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea so that the waters may come back upon the Egyptians and upon their chariots and upon their horsemen." And Moses stretched forth his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to its strength when the morning approached, and the Egyptians tried to flee from it, but the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the middle of the sea. Now, all of the atheist Bible theologians say, well, it was the Reed Sea, and it wasn't any more than about 18 inches deep. Now, how could that be a miracle? Oh, when God does things, he does things on a big scale, see? They're all covered. And the waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen and all the army of Pharaoh that came into the sea after them. I wonder if some stayed back on dry land on the other side. I imagine there must have been a couple there so they could run back and tell everybody what happened. Okay? And there did not remain so much as one of them. But the children of Israel walked upon dry ground in the middle of the sea, and the waters were a wall to them on their right hand and on their left hand. And then they saw that God fought for them. Now think of this. This is really a lesson in human nature. Think of all of the plagues that took place before the Exodus occurred. Then think of the killing of the firstborn of the Egyptian children and animals. And then they being released. Think about looking at that pillar of fire at night and that cloud by day, every day for and night for 40 years. Think about eating manna, being fed manna for 40 years. You couldn't miss which day is the Sabbath, could you? No. 40 years. Well, to show you how quickly people forget, okay, come over here to chapter 15 and verse 32. This is why miracles do not convince anyone over a lasting period of time to do right. You would think that the children of Israel, next chapter, chapter 15, verse 22, okay, that this would be a lasting thing, okay? And Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went into the wilderness of Sur, and they went 3 days' journey in the wilderness and found new water. And when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah because it was bitter. Therefore, they called the name of it Marah. And the people murmured against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" Exodus 15, verse 24. Why didn't they come to Moses and say, "Moses, we remember all that God did. Just 3 days ago, he killed all the Egyptians. Now there isn't any water here. Now we know that God can do great and miraculous things. Why don't you pray to God and ask him to provide water? We're all really thirsty." No, they complained. So then Moses cried to the Lord, showed him a tree, threw it in the water, became sweet, and so forth. And all they did, chapter 16, they griped and so forth. So remember this, miracles never convince anyone to fear God, okay? Now then, let's go on. Remember there was the G20 meeting in Asia, started in Japan and ended up in Australia. Now let's see, let's look at some things on a financial front, okay? Now here's quite an article. As interest rates plunged, America's money supply skyrocketed. So the Treasury bonds, 6 months, were virtually zero. The highest it got was 3% for 30 years, and of course there's more than 3% inflation, so it's zero. So the Federal Reserve the Bank of England, the European Central Bank, the Bank of Japan, all, and China as well, all printed money so they could buy the bonds from the government so the government could keep going. Okay? So that kept from 2001 to now, and 2008, that kept the whole world from falling into a worldwide depression. Okay? Now, there are bubbles in the stock market, there are bubbles in the tech market, there are bubbles in the housing market again. Now, what caused those bubbles in 1999 and 2000 to break, and in 2007 and 2008 to break? The interest rate on the T-bills or government bills went up. And all of the T-bills that they sold at the low interest rate, when the interest rate on the new issue comes up, it destroys the value of the ones that they issued before. So then there is a great hurry to sell those, and they sell them at a discount, and the stock market goes down, prices go up, and we are right at that point again. So how are they going to handle this? Well, another sleight of hand. Remember the video that we saw on how they produce money? Okay. Bank deposits will soon no longer be considered money, but paper investments. Now, what does that mean? See, if you have money in the bank now, it's supposed to be guaranteed to $250,000. Remember Cyprus? Everything over that equivalent amount in euros in the Cyprus banking system were confiscated by the failing banks as an investment. And therefore, the investment was worth zero. So we had to confiscate this money to save the bank. Now, this is how they're going to do it worldwide. The G20, all nations agreed to enact legislation to make all bank deposits to be considered paper investments, and everything over $250,000 not insured. Not insured. Okay? So each country will introduce its own legislation to affect the bail-in agreed by the G20 this coming weekend. They all know there is a Great Depression coming. So it won't come until all of the countries have put this legislation in effect. Okay? Large deposits at banks are no longer money, but as this legislation will formally push them down through the capital structure to a position of material capital risk in any failing institution. In our last financial crisis, deposits were de facto guaranteed by the state. But from November 16th, holders of large-scale deposits will be both de facto and de jure just another creditor squabbling over their share of the assets of the failed banks. A couple articles on that. Okay. Now, let's come to Revelation 13. Remember, Satan always introduces everything as a benefit, right? Yes. Revelation 13. They're marching forward with the things concerning the mark of the beast. They always have nice little trials, don't they? Well, Sweden is the location of the trial this time. Let's read it here. We've read this before, and I want to emphasize it again. If any of you believe that the mark of the beast is enforced Sunday keeping by the Pope, you are living in fantasy land. And if your church believes it, you better think about why you're still with that church that doesn't plainly understand the scriptures, because all scripture is truth. Okay? Now it says right here, verse 16, and he causes all, and remember, Revelation is worldwide events. Can we do this now? Of course we can. How many times have we asked the question, what do you think all those huge NSA buildings in Utah are all about? They will be able to do it to all, each and every person. Okay? The small and the great, the rich and the poor, the free and the bond, to receive a mark in their right hands or in their foreheads. So that no one, nada, may have the ability to buy and sell unless he has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. All right. Here's a nice little article. Isn't it amazing what the internet can do? See, God has given all of this technology so that no one in the world is going to be without a witness and will not know. Every handheld media device, tablet, computer is a potential Bible. If any of you have gone to our website, A Faithful Version, bang, you can download the whole Bible and you can go through it real quickly. Okay? So that means in addition to the printed Bibles that there will be literally billions of potential Bibles. So no one, even the smallest person in the world, the most insignificant person in the world, will be able to say, God, why didn't you warn me? I put it out there, why didn't you download it? Okay? I'm among the first Swedes with a microchip. Remember when I first gave the sermon? Mark of the Beast is here? Well, they're improving it greatly. Okay? Sweden has a global reputation as a leader in developing innovative technologies and will be a trend for inserting microchips in the human body. The local spoke to one of the first Swedes to choose an implant to unlock her office door. And this is Emilet Lantz, 25, from Umea in northern Sweden, got a chip inserted into her hand last week. Okay? And here's a picture of it. It's right between the thumb and the index finger. Right there. She became a guinea pig during the during SIME 2014 in Stockholm. I guess that's a conference about digitalism, internet in the future, yes. I don't feel as though that this is the future. This is the present. To me, it's weird that we haven't seen this sooner. Oh, what wonderful propaganda. There is evidence that the number of chip wearers in Sweden is growing rapidly. This much has been an underground phenomena up until now, but there are perhaps 100 people with the chip in Sweden. Okay? They're all going to say, how wonderful this is. I don't need keys anymore. I can go anywhere. Everything is on there. Okay? Now then, let's look at some other technologies to show you how vast this is going to be and how thorough this is going to be. So we had better be prepared to really stand for what we believe. 9 real technologies that will soon be inside you. Given the frenzy of interest following the announcement of the Apple Watch, you might think wearables will be the next really important shift in technology. Not so. Wearables will have their moment in the sun, but they're simply a transition technology. Technology will move from existing outside our bodies to residing in us. That's the next big frontier. So what are they going to have? Implantable smartphones. So you walk along, and of course your bones can reflect the sound. Turn on your busy signal, okay? Okay. You know, people will be walking along, you think they're crazy, but they're talking to someone. Okay? They'll be connected 24/7. What does it say about the mark of the beast? No rest day and night? Okay. That's already starting to happen. Last year, for instance, artist Anthony Antolinus had an RFID chip embedded in his arm that could store and transfer art to his handheld smartphone. They're going to have it. You can come home and, oh, you had a great day at the office. You sit down and plug up to your computer and you can download all your thoughts. Just take your thoughts and put them in digital form and store it right there. What about all those sins and lusts you had too? Now we have it in writing. We can convict you. Okay? Other scientists are working on eye implants that will let an image be captured in a blink of an eye and transmitted to any local storage, such as arm-borne RFID chip. Then they have healing chips. Put them in there. Your doctor will be able to know how your body is doing just by dialing up whatever your number is and pushing a little button, and he can see you. You need a little more diabetic insulin? Boop. Crease it. A little less? Boop. Take it away. Little pain? Get some pain pill. These are called cyber pills that talk to your doctor. They're in there talking to your doctor. Okay? They already have, thanks to Bill Gates, an implantable birth control. Yes. Then we have smart tattoos. Smart tattoos are going to be something. Okay? The tiny chip generates small amounts of, yes, tattoos are hip, seemingly ubiquitous, everywhere. Digital tattoos not only look cool, but can also perform useful tasks, like unlocking your car, entering mobile phone codes with your fingertip. So they're working on this. All right? Then brain-computer interface, we already talked about that. Now they're going to have it so that you can ingest into your system meltable bio batteries, which will connect you with your doctor. Very easy to use. Then the verified self has all your information, and it shows the little chip here, and it's going to get smaller and smaller and smaller, and I am sure they're going to make it into an almost invisible tattoo, which is this. Implantable hammer against social norms. They raise privacy issues and even point to a larger potential dystopia, or, yes, being ruled by a despot. This technology could be used to ID every single human being. Never happened before. Already, the U.S. Army has serious programs afoot to equip soldiers with implanted RFID chips, so keeping track of troops becomes automatic and worldwide, and they can keep track of anyone, anywhere. Not only that, they can control what the people think by sending messages back to it, just like most people don't know it. Most modern computers, not computers, but televisions today, have a spy chip already in it. They can activate that, and they can see you, and they can hear you. It's already there. Think what they can do if it's in you. Think what they can do if they can read thoughts. Let's send an electronic impulse and cripple them. Have you already been desensitized to that by television ads? It's like Dolores has said many times, Satan transmits ahead of time what he's going to do, as you find in movies and ads. It's going to come. So this will be the perfect thing. No. What's going to have to happen? They're going to have to renumber everyone in the world. Old Social Security numbers be out the window. It won't work. And besides, they might even be able to identify people by identifying part of their genetic code, like a fingerprint. Okay? Now, a fingerprint is not the mark of the beast. That's part of you. But when they put it in you and can identify you, that's the mark of the beast. And they will control the world. And it'll be presented. Think how wonderful this will be. We're going to end crime. We're going to stop wars. We're going to heal people. Everyone's going to get along. Don't you want that? But you have absolutely no privacy, period. So while the president was out there strutting around in his glorious narcissistic way of flaunting his authority to Congress, all of this has been going on. So remember this, when something big is happening on television, look someplace else because it's like a shell game. You think you see what is happening, but there are other things that are happening that you know nothing about. And when it comes around, you say, how did that happen? So this is why we need to watch. I know this was a little disjointed, but these are all the events that were happening while the president was preparing the nation for his being crowned the Emperor of the United States of America. For our overseas offices, please check our website, www.cbcg.org.